The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
I got on the scale this morning. Hadn't done it in a while. And it sort of gave me pause, particularly since I believe it's either 3 weeks from today or 3 weeks from tomorrow. I have to go in to see Dr. Doria, my heart specialist, and get my checkup. And it also means I have to have my, I go and I draw blood and they do the whole analysis. I was like, oh. And it turns out that Bill Ostrander and I had agreed to talk about the danger of highly processed or ultra processed foods. And he sent me the article from the Washington Post. Let me just read part of it. Is your diet ultra processed? In many households, ultra processed foods are mainstays at the kitchen table. They include products that you may not even think of as junk food, such as breakfast cereal, muffins, snack bars, and sweetened yogurts. Soft drinks and energy drinks count too. So just in that paragraph, I'm reading it this morning going, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. So I'm appreciative to Bill for suggesting this topic, and it's a reminder that all of us, including me, have to be more aware of what is going on. Anyway, why am I talking? You know Bill. He's run for public office. He's a very prominent local activist, actor, and it turns out he also has a background in agriculture. Anyway, Bill Ostrander back on the show. Bill, good evening.
Good evening, Dave. Thanks for having me. Appreciate
sure. You know, I'm mixed on this segment, though, because I know we need to talk about it, but it's also a little bit painful because I realize my own shortcomings here.
Well, you know, I don't want you to blame yourself too much, Dave. I mean, there's these are powerful industries that are using science and data to trick you sometimes into choosing foods that you wouldn't ordinarily choose if you knew the difference, or were it not for the manipulations of the food themselves. You know, they're far ahead of us in terms of how to get us to eat certain things that may not necessarily be in our best interest, but help a bottom line.
Yeah, the stat in the article is almost 60% of the calories that adults in America eat are from ultra-processed foods. They account for 25 to 50% of the calories consumed in many other countries, including England, Canada, France, and Brazil. 60%, that's pretty high.
It's very high. And, you know, this is a very big subject, so there's so many different angles you can approach this subject on. You know, number one is just taking off your concerns about the things that you're eating and thinking that you're, you know, trying to make good choices, or even, you know, what your control levels are. You know, one of the things that the food industry has done that I thought was, really, really fascinating was each of us has what we call a satiety point. A satiety point is, you know, when you eat a certain food so much and eventually you just grow sick of it and you go, oh, couldn't eat another mouthful of that. Well, we all have a satiety point. If we were, you know, just running around out in the woods, we saw some honey and we started eating the honeycomb and so forth, our brains after a certain point would go, uh-oh, enough, stop, don't eat anything more, and we'd put it down and walk away from it. One of the things that they've been able to do in the food industry is to figure out that if they slam us with both, say, a sugar, a salt, and a trans fat, or three different types of ingredients, it bypasses our satiety point, so we don't know when to stop. Mm. We literally can't eat just one.
Wow. And the consequences. A recent study of more than 22,000 people found that people who ate a lot of ultra-processed foods had a 20% higher likelihood of early death and a 32% higher risk of dying from heart disease compared with people who ate few ultra-processed foods. I guess we should define our terms, Bill. When we use this phrase ultra-processed or high-processed, what are we talking about?
Well, these are foods that are meant to be convenient. They're hyper palatable. They're low cost. They're typically high in sugars, refined grains, fats, preservatives, salt, things like that. They typically have very little in the way of a whole food, a vegetable, a fruit, grain, beans, et cetera, or nuts, things like that. So we're typically talking about most of the food that you would get if you stopped at a gas station to fill up on your next trip.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's not necessarily just fast food. It can be a whole variety of other things as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like most, one of the things that I think catches the surprise of most people is sweetened yogurts, for example. Yogurts are colored. They're added a lot of sugar. There's some salt. There's starches sometimes in them. There's different types of proteins, artificial sweeteners. A lot of these yogurts, which are geared towards children as healthy snacks for the by their parents, are considered healthy snacks, are actually not very good for kids and actually have way too much sugar. And it's very difficult for a lot of us to understand whether or not something is good or bad for us, even for us label readers sometimes, unless you really understand some of the terms. And there's also a lot of ingredients that are never listed on our ingredient list for our foods. One of the rules of thumb, however, is if you really want to understand whether or not food is good for you or not, is if it has more than five ingredients in it, it's probably not good for you.
The rule is five, if it's got more than five ingredients.
Yes, more than five ingredients on it. Tends to be just a rule of thumb. That's an old school rule of thumb. If it has more than five ingredients, it's probably not a great choice of a food for you. And I think it's, you know, we have to understand this isn't just an American problem. Americans tend to eat more of this type of food than anything else. But it's caught the attention of the World Health Organization because as Western or multinational companies make a greater and greater impact on the diets of people all across the world, there's been a tremendous increase in the amount of obesity in countries all around the world. And in fact, Harvard University had done a study on that, and they've determined that not just because of highly processed foods, but also because of some of the foods that people are not getting or foods that they're eating too much of, that there are 11 million people each year that are dying from dietary reasons, which is a greater threat than any other type of death in the world today, including tobacco, just because of the foods we're eating.
Yes. Yeah, I'm looking here at some of the examples of the ultra-processed foods. Everything from Frosted Flakes, Hot Pockets, donuts, hot dogs, cheese crackers, and boxed macaroni and cheese. These are everyday items that a lot of people consume, Bill.
Yeah, and what we have is a situation now where our taste buds are dynamic, and we have grown to really enjoy these flavors, all of us, including myself, and I try to eat a pretty healthy diet. But we all tend to, gravitate towards these foods that are comfortable, that are pleasurable to the tongue, and so forth. And we've kind of lost our appetite and our taste for whole foods as a rule because these other foods are so convenient, they're cheap, and so forth. And, man, we can trace part of that back all the way back to the 1960s when we tried to introduce, you know, basically a cheap food program in the United States to end hunger back in the Lyndon Johnson program. There was an attempt to make food more affordable for most Americans. Well, okay, that's a great idea. We certainly want to make food affordable, but sometimes what that has led us to is processed foods because they're more inexpensive to make than to wait for a year for an apple to grow or for making something more palatable. Because you add on to the top of that most of our fruits and vegetables are picked prematurely and then gassed. So we oftentimes, I mean, who doesn't go to a restaurant and wish that the tomatoes were grown in their garden rather than harvested someplace? And the reason for that is that the sugars, like 60% of the sugars in those foods that make them more palatable, come in the last 3 days of ripening. But when that fruit is totally ripened and ready to eat, now it's also very soft or could be very soft and is easily damaged and won't make it all the way to the market. So what we end up getting is whole foods that don't actually taste very good because nature hasn't had the chance to ripen them, you know, for our palates.
Yeah. All right, we are in conversation with Bill Ostrander, sharing with us this article in the Washington Post about the danger of ultra-processed foods, or nearly 60% of the food that is sold in this country. Dave Congleton in conversation with Bill Ostrander talking about the dangers of ultra-processed foods, daily foods that we consume, and the risk of getting heart disease. As someone who's had heart surgery, you don't want to go through what I went through. I'm just saying. Anyway, Bill, let's talk about what's happening in some other countries. Let's start first in South America with Chile. What did they do in terms of highly processed foods?
Well, there was a legislator back in 2012 who recognized that there was an obesity epidemic happening in Chile that was largely the consequence of multinational food companies moving in and replacing indigenous foods and culturally appropriate foods with highly processed foods that come from wherever they came from. And so they decided to see if they could try to educate the public and take away some of the manipulation that food companies were using essentially to addict consumers. And yes, I use the word addiction because they actually approached the issue much like we approached cigarette smoking in the early 70s, where we stopped advertising cigarettes on, you know, motion pictures and in television ads and so forth and so on. So what they did was is they got together and they figured out that what they were going to try to do was to educate the public so that they could make more informed choices. Because obviously they can't tell people you can only eat this or you can only eat that. That's not how we live. That's not our type of government. So what we want to do is to give the consumer more choice and to help the consumer understand why they should or shouldn't eat this food or the other thing. And we do have some labeling, but most people aren't very sophisticated, don't look at them, and sometimes just get overwhelmed by it. And because certain flavors we become addicted to, and we never even think about them after that.
Yeah, so what happened in Chile?
So what they did was is that they started adding labels to food packaging on foods that were high in sugar, sodium, and trans fat. And then they actually required these companies to adhere to those labels unless they changed their formulas. And even Coca-Cola eventually removed some of the sugar out of their product. And the result was that there was a reduction of 24% in their total calories. There was a reduction of 27% in calories from sugar, 16% reduction in calories from saturated fat, and 37% reduction in calories from sodium. And that is a significant difference to the overall health and well-being of those Chileans who are observing that packaging and making different choices. Hmm. And that's basically what we're trying to do here. In fact, I've been working with our congressman to come up with legislation that actually works off the same premise as we did with cigarettes, to try to inform people so that they make better decisions and use less of the hooks, the animated characters, the commercial time, so forth, so that people tend to make more informed and healthier choices.
I want to hear more about that, but I also want to hear about what happened in Mexico.
Mexico also did the same thing. There are two countries that adopted some of these policies. Now, Mexico didn't adopt the entire program that Chile did, but they did. If you've been down, anybody's been down in Mexico recently, you pick up one of those quarts of soda, and it'll show a black label on it saying that this product or this beverage is higher than what is healthy for you in sugar. And so the World Health Organization has looked at this, and they are considering trying to create more programs like this in countries all around the world as multinational companies get further and further into the diets of you know, countries from all over.
Hmm. Bill Ostrander on this broadcast. So this is something you're working with Congressman Carbajal on?
I have been. I've been mostly working with his chief of staff, Jeremy Tittle, on this, but it's a project that we worked on. We got sidelined during the COVID epidemic, and hopefully we're going to get this put back together. It's going to be a very difficult fight. There's going to be a lot of pushback from major food companies, but you have to recognize that it's not just for the health of us individuals, our individual choice. If we were able to cut out some of the highly processed foods in our diets, some studies are suggesting that it could reduce our Medicare budget by 11%, that it could change some of the leading causes of death in the United States. The diseases, leading causes of diseases now are cardiovascular disease, cancers, and type 2 diabetes. These are preventable deaths. These are not communicable diseases. These are non-communicable diseases that are typically caused by the diets that we're eating. Yeah. And that's significant. That's the same reason we cut out tobacco, the same reason that we try to create rules for who can get access to pharmaceuticals, et cetera, because they have significant health consequences to us.
Well, you already used the example of smoking, and I agree with you. But before the news break, give us the gist of the legislation. What exactly would the proposed legislation call for?
The legislation would basically call for labeling foods modeled much after the Chilean legislation that helps to label foods, reduce the amount of advertisements during the peak hours when children are watching TV, and create a program basically in our farm program that rewards farmers to grow healthier foods. I mean, most people don't know, but the Farm Bill, for example, has subsidies. About 85% of the Farm Bill is subsidies for large grain operations like corn and soybeans and things like that. And less than 2% of it, about 1.5% of it, is targeted for organic farmers. We actually spend more money in our Farm Bill on tobacco than we do on organic fruits and vegetables, which is absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And if you were to go to myplate.gov, it would show you that we're supposed to have fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and proteins on this plate. But when you look at it, the My Plate is overwhelmed by, in the Farm Bill, simply by grains that are used for high fructose corn syrup and other highly processed foods.
Yeah.
And they're cheap, but they're not healthy. We actually have a lot of work to do.
MyPlate.gov is the website that Bill's referring to. So what would these labels, what would be on the labels?
It would basically say, you know, let's just say it's a soda. It would have a black label on it. It would say that it's an unhealthy level of sugar. If it's, I'm making this up now, but let's just say that it's chicken breasts. Many chicken breasts, actually, even organic ones, are pumped full of salt water because it's still considered natural. But they plump up the breast with a tremendous amount of sodium, and it would probably show on the label that there's too much sodium. It may show in certain types of chips or crackers that it's very high in trans fats and sodium. So it would simply label things when they exceed what would be a healthy amount of that particular ingredient for the diet for an individual.
Bill Ostrander is on this broadcast. When do you think he's going to introduce it?
Well, we haven't finished the bill yet because it's quite complicated to write this because it touches so many people. And we also know that we're going to get enormous pushback from the major food groups. Major food companies, you know, one of the things that the food companies, you know, they know this. I mean, the food companies know that this is unhealthy stuff. They actually had a meeting back in like 1999 where they were sitting around going, look, we're going to get ourselves into a situation kind of like we did with tobacco, because Philip Morris used to own like General Mills, I think it was. And he said, well, you know, we better do something about this or government is going to come in and create legislation for us. And basically the head of the company said, well, look, we want to make healthy foods that people want to buy because we also have an obligation to our shareholders to return on their investment.
And we have an obligation to go to news and traffic and weather. And we'll be back on the other side and continue our conversation with Bill Ostrander talking about the danger of ultra-processed foods and legislation that he is helping to put together to address the concern. All right, 60% of the food consumed in this country is high-processed, ultra-processed food. Bill Ostrander is very worried about it. He's so concerned that he is helping to draft legislation that would require labeling of foods. We start with Kelly in St. Louis on KVEC. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
So much to say with so little time, but this is a great topic and people really need to do their research and read their labels. My husband just was told he's pre-diabetic, so we've started really reading labels, and it's amazing. You can look at nutritional facts, sugars, carbs, all that stuff, but when you actually read the ingredients and you see what is in here, there's literally... You just have to read labels. And it's amazing to me the products that we have on our shelves in the United States, in our cleaning products and our makeup and stuff like that, that's banned in the United States. But even in our food, Frosted Flakes are banned in Europe. Honey Bunches of Oats, Skittles, like so much food that we allow and that we pump into our children that causes cancer, causes heart disease, causes all these problems. The GMO, I was looking at Mission Tortillas the other day, and there's modified crap in there. That is not, our bodies don't know how to process that. All the corn.
You're breaking up, Bill. Could you hear what she's saying?
Mostly, yes.
What can you comment on?
Well, she's absolutely right, and I'm glad that she and it sounds like her husband are making a stronger effort to reduce their dependence on sugar and unhealthy things in their lives. I think that's great. I think what people have to understand is this is not about taking away choice from people. This is about taking away some of the mystery about the foods that they're eating and about the pressure that is on these companies to make foods that return a big bottom line for shareholders. I'd like to quote something from the CEO of Philip Morris, who's no friend of government or government regulation, but he said, look, in the case of the processed food industry, what you're looking at is a total inability on their part to collectively decide to do the right thing by consumers on the health profile of their products.
Right.
In this case, you have to use government regulation, if nothing else, than to give companies cover from the pressure of Wall Street.
Kelly, what do you think about the labeling idea that Bill's proposing?
I think it's great. I mean, I remember when Alesta came out years and years ago. I still lived at home, so 25, 30 years ago. That caused so many problems for people. That was supposed to reduce fat in your chips, and it turned out to be terrible. Bottom line is it's about money, and it's all about money and politics. Monsanto got passed for because of money. That's a cheap, quick way. We're having modified beef made now, and they're wanting to, because of this food shortage that we have, they want to start creating fake vegetables and fruits, and it's just terrible.
Right.
We need to give back to our farmers.
Right.
They put so many rules on them, it's ridiculous. But anyway.
All right, Kelly. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Carolyn's in Pismo on KVEC. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn. This is a great topic. I came in on the later end of it, and I want to say they need to do this because I have a condition called GERD, and I can certain things I can't eat. I can't eat any tomatoes, a lot of that anymore. So I have to be careful what I eat. And also, I try to look at things that are more healthier. And one thing I noticed with all of these is that, like, I'm going to say it wrong, hummus?
Hummus.
That H-U-M-M?
Yeah. Hummus.
Yeah. Am I saying that?
Yes.
Okay, I bought it one time. I look at the plain, even the plain, and with other things, too. And this must be a preservative for them, but I can't have garlic, and I can't have lemon juice, or lemon. Everything I look at, I'm shocked, because it has garlic and lemon juice. I can't eat that. And it's like sometimes you don't pay attention, like she said, to the ingredients, and you just pick it out. Well, some things on the label, it'll say in front that it's garlic hummus. But then in others, it'll say plain. But that's not necessarily true.
Right,
and there is more ingredients, and I have to be careful about everything. I look at the sodium level, too, and it's not always accurate because it'll say low sodium, and some aren't.
Hang on with us, please. Bill, respond. Yeah.
Well, you know, the legislation that I'm proposing and the concerns that we have aren't necessarily going to stop a person from knowing whether there's garlic or lemon in hummus. That's not really our concern.
Well,
I'm glad that people are eating hummus. What I'm more concerned about is people eating, you know, cotton candy Cap'n Crunch or, you know, the top three foods that are contributing to our early demise and to our health issues are things like soda, red meat, and a lack of whole grains, red meat and salt, sorry. So those are the three things that we really need to cut down on specifically.
Right.
Carol, anything else you want to say? But,
yeah, I have this real quick, too. But there's other things that you need to be concerned of because I buy almond milk in the box.
Right.
And if you're buying it in the box, so the date on that will say, you buy it now, it'll say it'll last to 2023. Okay, so there has to be something else in there to keep it that for that long. And so, but you buy it in the container and you put it in the refrigerator, in 2 weeks it goes bad or a week. So there has to be something that's preserving them, even in the cans, that's preserving them. And like what I'm saying,
Yeah. There's
also that citric acid and everything too, on top of what he's saying, that some of that is not healthy for you. And that's why some people with cancer and all that, they turn to more of the natural food. Even apples, they have, I didn't realize this, they have wax on them when you see them in the store.
Yeah, Bill was talking about that example earlier. Caroline, thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate that. She's got an important point, I think, though, Bill, about the idea of the preservatives that are used to extend the lifetime of food. There's got to be something in that stuff, too.
Certainly there are. Those are chemicals that the body isn't used to processing. And there are approximately 10,000 different ingredients that the FDA allows in food right now that actually haven't been tested to know what they do to a human being after eating them for years and years and years. It's based on a loophole that was made a long time ago that said that they didn't have to relabel the food if it contained a small increase or a small minute amount of something, but didn't change the overall character of the product. And they, back then they were talking about, let's say, another gram of salt or a little bit more vinegar, but it actually become a loophole where they've now run almost 10,000 different ingredients through without having them authorized through the FDA.
Bill Ostrander on this broadcast reminding us of the dangers of highly processed, ultra-processed foods. Very important article in the Washington Post calling for increased labeling of these foods. We go to Jim on KVEC. Hi, Jim.
Hi, you guys.
Hi.
I think one of the other problems is the relationship between our society and cooking dinner. People just don't know how to cook anymore. They don't really care to cook about anymore. That's a gigantic problem. And I can tell you that from my own personal life, when my wife got pregnant, she says, I want to stop working. I'm going to raise the children. And as soon as they were old enough, two boys, starting at age three, they were making chicken cutlets, cleaning broccoli, blah, 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 blah. It's second nature to them. And I can't tell you, in the 1970s, I must have shepherded 24 females to cook their first real turkey. I think the society here is really out of whack.
And Bill, what about cooking?
Well, I think that's true. That's a whole other subject about having sit-down meals with families and creating meals and so forth, and, you know, what our work weeks are like and allowing us to do that. But, you know, what I think I would talk about specifically from that, though, is that there is some people who will say, look, it's cheaper for me and more quick to stop at McDonald's and pick up something. I can pick up and feed my family for, you know, $20. I couldn't put down some chicken and fresh vegetables and rice on the table for that price.
Yep.
And there's some truth to that.
Well, I'm gonna argue with that.
Partially because of our politics.
One at a time. Hang on, Jim. Go ahead, Bill.
And I say that's partially because of our politics and how our food system is prioritized. So we do need to have a lot more. I think a lot more whole foods are cooked around a table, but there are still lots of foods that people have on their table, even the evening meal, that are processed foods that people wouldn't even realize as being unhealthy for them.
Yeah. All right, Jim, what else do you want to say?
So, you know, my favorite night of the year is Christmas Eve. That's the night of the fishes for Sicilians. And I invite all the strays that we know that have no place to go. And the deal is they have to come to my house at 2 p.m. We all sit down and we cook. Dinner's ready at 8 p.m. It's just a marvelous experience, but people just don't do it.
I'm glad you called, Jim. Thank you. On the Stolberg text line, it's almost like when restaurants started putting calories on the menu to make people aware of what they were actually consuming. Is that a fair comparison, Bill?
Well, certainly from the point of view that it's additional information that helps people to make an educated choice for themselves. I do sometimes look at the calorie counts on there and make a decision on what I'm going to eat based on the amount of calories. I would just like to make one point about what the gentleman was saying a moment ago. You know, it's great that he wants to sit down and have food with other people and make a nice meal, but there are lots of foods on those tables, such as stuffing, cakes, brownies, reconstituted meat products like hot dogs, fish sticks, things like that that end up getting on people's tables too, which are also highly processed foods, packaged breads and buns, highly processed foods. So, I agree with him, but the point of the story really is about what foods we're consuming, not so much about the meals that we're preparing at home.
All right, we'll come back for a final segment with Mr. Ostrander. I'm Dave Congleton. You're listening to Hometown Radio. Time for Craig to make an historic announcement. Craig, I understand that after listening to Mr. Ostrander's presentation, you have decided you never again will eat another hot dog.
Maybe that's I may have said it wrong if that's what you heard.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't touch my Nathan's hot dogs.
Now, what the Nathan, are they the all beef?
Yes.
The all beef hot dogs, Bill.
All delicious.
Those got to be good for you?
No, not so much. You got to look for nitrates and nitrites in those. Those are the things that are linked to cancer and so forth. And usually red meat as a whole isn't necessarily our best food. If you're going to eat them once in a great while, you know, okay, we all eat stuff that isn't good for us. But as a rule, cut them out of your diet.
All right, Stan's in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Stan.
Hi.
Hi.
I heard that Oreos can advertise, Oreo cookies can advertise that they have zero trans fat. They have that on their label. But there's a law that the food companies cooked up that you can have, say you had zero trans fat when you can actually have trans fat in Oreo cookies, less 1% or less. So I think that the food company lobbies are pretty strong if they can get that kind of legislation.
Food company lobbies are indeed strong, aren't they, Bill?
Yes, they are. I mean, and not just the food companies themselves, but things like the corn lobby is an exceedingly strong lobby in Washington, D.C. that tends to push legislation to go to feed or to create foods that maybe not even in our best interest. I mean, when's the last time you've heard of the carrot lobby in Washington?
Stan, what do you think of the idea? What do you think of the idea of the labeling?
I think that humans evolved to have a need for fat and salt, and in moderation, it's all right. But everywhere you turn, there's fat and salt, available to eat, and people, the food companies, and the burger joints, and the pizza joints. They know that people desire that, foods that have food, like cheeses and hamburgers and all that kind of stuff. In moderation, fine. But salt causes heart disease, and fat causes excess, causes heart disease. And we have a very high rate of, people having heart attacks in this country. And I think that's what Bill is talking about as far as the health concerns. People consuming an excess, and the excess is freely available, and people love to eat it. It's not good for them.
Well, talk about it. Stan, good to hear from you. Thank you. He's right, isn't he, Bill?
Well, yes, but I would take exception to one thing that he said. You know, moderation is great, but the part of the problem, and one of the reasons that we're talking about having to introduce some type of legislation, is because scientists learn to dissect the elements of the palate, And then they tweak ratios of salt and sugar and fat to optimize taste. And then they bypass our satiety points where we don't necessarily realize that we're eating above moderated amounts of salt, sugar, or fat. We end up consuming more than what our bodies would allow us to if we were able to distinguish those individual flavors. Right. But we can't. Yeah. So they learned to trick us to go past those things.
And people still smoke, even though we know it's bad for you. Some people, they just want to eat what they want to eat, you know?
That's right. And we're not going to convince everybody. But, I mean, what we're recognizing is that sugar has the same sort of addictive qualities or characteristics, I should say, not qualities, but characteristics as nicotine. They're very, very similar.
If you want
to... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, just to give an example of the, you know, that, you know, like Coca-Cola realized that their best customers are the 20% of the people who drink 80% of the product. And so what they want is they actually call those people the heavy users. And they had a formula in order that they would calculate, you know, their taste, their flavor, their product on that 20%. And they try to get young people hooked on certain types of brands at a very early age, because then it'll be a food brand loyalty that they have for the rest of their lives.
Right.
I used to love Nestle's Crunch Bars that I had when I was like second grade. Yeah. I still think of them as a good flavor, even though I don't eat them anymore.
All right,
and that's one thing that they try to do very early.
Let's get to North County Jim on KVEC. Hey, Jim.
Hello, David.
Hey, Jim.
I want to say that it, you are what you eat. And on the red meat end of it, unfortunately, some of the majority of animals that are cattle and well, I should say chickens also are fed poorly. And that's attributed to the fact that it's not healthy for you. But if you find a good source of that, you'll be fine. I'm a red meat person coming from where I come from. And I also have to say that I bought a Coca-Cola in Arizona, and the cap, I kept the cap because it said in Spanish, contains caffeine, avoid giving it to children.
Interesting.
And that's Coca-Cola, and I kept the cap just for that fact. And there were other ones that said the sugar content's too high, but keep in mind that the sugar, they use sugar cane in Central and South America, not like in the United States where they use sugar from corn.
That's right.
It's a different deal.
Bill, I'm short on time, but I want you to respond to North County Jim, please.
Well, I couldn't hear everything that he had to say, but I did hear that they were labeling the cap saying, don't give the children because of too much caffeine.
Right.
And they were talking about sugar.
But the other,
and I think that's...
I'm sorry. The other point I want to make clear, though, is his point at the beginning is that a lot of what you get from beef and chicken depends upon what you feed the animals originally. And if you feed them better, then it will be okay for you to consume them.
Well, there is a partial truth to that. But by and large, there's been enough studies that have shown that people that eat large amounts of red meat tend to have cardiovascular issues much more so than people who don't. Yeah. So I wouldn't necessarily say that just because they're a grass-fed beef that they're necessarily a green light to go ahead and eat as much as you want. I don't think you'll find very many studies that support that. So while I'm all for grass-fed beef and feeding animals naturally a diet that is good for them, and that will translate to a healthier animal and healthier fats and so forth out of that meat to us, it's still not the best diet overall. I mean, I think most people would say that you want to look at something like a 90-10, 90% fruits, vegetables, whole grains, 10% proteins from meats and things like that.
Jim, what else is on your mind?
Well, I'd have to disagree with that. I'd say more like 70 or 60%. You know, on the vegetable and grain end, and then the rest on proteins. But the proteins from meats are not exactly the healthiest for you. You have to keep in mind that the fats, the good, clean fats, are better for you than the meat itself. And that's a study in the beef industry, and also in the beef dictionary, that shows that fact.
Right.
That it's clean fat, it burns quick. Of course, you got to be doing something. You can't sit around just on a computer.
Time burns quick, too. North County Jim, always good to hear from you. Thank you for checking in. Bill, I want to make sure we have time to remind folks, if we want to support this legislation that you're in the process of helping to write, is there anything we can do at this point?
Well, write your congressman and let him know that this is an exceedingly important point for us. I mean, we have to group together. We're pushing up against, you know, the money of Wall Street in order to battle for our own health. It's not simply a situation of I want to live longer than the next guy or something. It also means that it could reduce our costs for Medicare and for health-related liabilities throughout this country. It makes us more productive as human beings, and we stick around longer for our children. It's an incredibly important thing for us all to get involved in and to demand. From our legislation, because that's the only way we can push back uniformly against an industry that is tied to shareholder profits as their motivation for what we're eating. And that's not necessarily a good thing.
I want people to start reading labels. I want people to become more conscious of their consumer choices. I agree with Jim out in Los Osos. It'd be great if people could eat more at home, but if they get whole foods and good food, just eating at home in and of itself isn't going to solve the problem. Bill Ostrander, we so appreciate the conversation. I got 30 seconds. Anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, I would say if you really want an in-depth understanding of what this issue is all about, there's a terrific author, a Pulitzer Prize winning author named Michael Moss, who's written a series of books. One of them is called Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. And another book, a follow-up book on that, is called Hooked. And they're great reads, and they help you to uncover exactly what the thinking is that goes on at these major food companies and how you're manipulated into eating foods that are unhealthy for you.
We got to go. Bill, thank you very much for the conversation.
The 920 KBEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slow County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kbec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111-911.